let's have a look now at the second thing that's important in submodality work, and that is the elicitation of universal experiences. The reason that we elicitate or elicit universal experiences is because when we think of certain things, we hold them in our minds, they have a universal meaning. So for example, if you see a red stoplight in your head, you know, for you, it kind of, the meaning of it is stop. So like, for example, if you're driving in a road and you're minding your own business and suddenly out your peripheral vision you see a red light, you're warned to stop. You don't have to think, oh, I better stop. Like the foot goes straight onto the pedal. It's like an automatic thing. So universal experiences are very important because we can predict that when we ask someone to elicit a universal experience, we can predict what meaning it will generate. So we want lots of meaning and evoke a universal response. So traffic lights stop, very useful in motivational strategies, perhaps. Or certainly in the belief change that we're going to do this morning as well before lunch, if we get time, is the submodality belief change. So you have beliefs that are absolutely true for you. So everybody has a belief that you know, for example, with certainty that the sun is going to come up tomorrow. Even though you might not see it, you know it's there somewhere because it's going to be light. So you have an absolute belief about that. So if I ask you to go inside now and elicit the submodalities of the belief that the sun will come up, then you could do that, you know. And even, it's the thing, even though you, the thing with submodality work is, from a visual point of view as well, it's not, you don't see big clear pictures, you guess. It's like, what is it? And you go, duh, it's this, this and this. Because it's unconscious. You're not always seeing pure perfect pictures. So don't get hung up on like, well, I'm not very good at visualizing. It doesn't matter. Just go with unconscious what's there. Okay, you're really trusting the process when you do this. There's a big test in trusting your unconscious. Or it could be a belief, and also you want beliefs that are no longer true for you as well. A belief that's no longer true. So that's not a belief that you don't, so it's not something you don't believe in, it's something that you used to believe in, but is not true for you now. So a belief, for example, would be like, I am six. There was a time where it was true for you that I am six and you believed it, but it's not true for you now, okay? Or a belief that I go to school, which may be true for some of you who are actually in education, but those of you who are not, I believe that I go to school is a belief that is no longer true for you. Good. And the other thing about submodality work, making submodalities work, is the keys to it. When you're eliciting submodalities, is I think as we touched on a day or so ago, is that what do we need to do when eliciting submodalities? Do them quickly. Yes, very good. And the purpose for that is if you don't, then you'll change them from one thing to another because you go too slowly. You know, is it near? Or is it far? And that's not what you want. You don't want to install the submodalities, you want to elicit the submodalities. So you need to push them very fast. And maybe you want to push them so fast that they probably can't keep up with you. It's that kind of vast. They just have to go with what feels right to them in the moment, which is an answer from the unconscious mind. And in addition, you also want to be able to keep your hands down by your side when you're doing it. You know, is it near or is it far? You know, you're installing it each time when you do that. So keep your hands down by your side. Well, you know, hopefully what you'll be doing is you'll have your script with you anyway, and you're doing this anyway when you'll be actually doing a formal elicitation anyway, so your hands won't be moving. So let's have a quick look at the checklist, if you're not on that page already. Section 6, page 5 is the first one. And let's just quickly whiz through to make sure everyone's clear on what these submodalities actually are. So black and white and colour, fairly obvious. So is it near or far? So is the picture near to you, or are you seeing it further away? Is the picture bright or is it dim? Pretty obvious. Again, where is the picture located in the person's field of vision? You know, even if they've got their eyes closed, it's still somewhere in their field of vision. Yeah. So is it down there? Is it up there? Is it over there? Where is it? What's the size of the picture? So is it like, you know, big, or has it got, you know, or has it got a frame around it? Because we have that coming up in a moment as well. I think we've got framed or panoramic, yeah. Again, is it associated or dissociated? So are you seeing the what's in the picture through your own eyes, or are you seeing a picture of yourself in the picture? Is it focused or defocused? So is it a blurry image, or is it sharp, for example? So is it framed or panoramic? That means, has it got a frame around it, or is it literally all around you? Is it moving, or is it still? And if it is moving, obviously, is it moving fast, slow, or normal? And you can ask them the amount of contrast in the picture. That's the difference between, you know, certain images. Is the picture, like, you know, all blurry again? So it's kind of similar to focused or defocused. Frankly, personally speaking, I find most people, and this is a hallucination, I find most people don't actually know how to answer the question about contrast. It's not easy to answer. So don't expect to have a lot of meaning out of that, because I haven't found it. Is it 3D or is it flat? And some of these are fairly obvious, because if it's framed, for example, then it may be flat, but not necessarily. And the angle that you're viewing the picture from, so are you viewing it from above it, below it, to the side of it, whatever it is. And also number of pictures, because they may be seeing more than one picture. It could be like two or three different pictures they're seeing in one. That can happen as well. So obviously location, we've seen auditory location, and also direction. So as in, it's coming from here, but in which direction is the voice going? It's starting there and going this way? Is it starting there and going that way? Is it starting there and coming through me? Which direction is the voice traveling? Is the voice loud or soft? Fast or slow? Pitch high or low? Tonality, timbre we've discussed, is the quality of the voice. So is it like gravelly, or is it clear pronunciation? Are there any pauses in the sound? Cadence is rhythm, basically. Duration and uniqueness of sounds. Is there anything unique about it? And from a kinesthetic, location again, where's the feeling located in your body? Because like feeling located here in your stomach is very different to feeling located in your finger. Very different. Is there a size to the feeling? Shape? So it may or may not have a shape. I think it was Karen, didn't we say, you know, when we said to her, what shape has that image got? Remember I said the shape, what shape is it? And she said like, oh, it's a ball, remember that? Yeah. Again, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't matter for it to have meaning. Intensity of the feeling. So is it like a strong feeling, or is it mild? Steady, or is it changing? That's like, well, that sort of ties in a little bit with movement as well. So if it is moving, how is it moving? Is the moving spinning? And if it's spinning, which way is it spinning? Is it spinning this way, or is it spinning this way? Duration of the movement. Any vibration to the movement, any pressure or heat or weight. So is it heavy or light? So those are our submodalities in the checklist. And we need to elicit all of those submodalities when we're doing interventions. So let's have a look now at our first intervention of moving people from a desired to an undesired state. Let's have a look at the like to dislike. So with the like to dislike, we have a script there for it. We're looking to, can you think of a food that you currently like but you wish you did not? Good. What is it? Get to say. And then say, okay, as you think about how much you like whatever food it is, do you have a picture? Again, we say, do you have a picture, not can you have a picture. It's do you have a picture, because they may not have a picture, you see. If they don't have a picture, then you could say, could you have a picture? Because if it, the light to dislike script, we don't need absolutely to it to be visual, but it will probably work best if it is. So once we've done that, and they've got the food in mind, we quickly elicit the submodalities of the picture first, the visual, then the auditory and the kinesthetic. There may not be any sounds associated to it. If there's not, then don't bother eliciting. So the first thing we do visual, and then say, okay, great, so what sounds are associated to this picture? And if they say none, then you move on to the kinesthetic. And if they say yes, there are, I say, okay, great, so what's the location sound, blah, 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 and go through the rest of them. And then when we get the kinesthetic, great, so are there any feelings associated with this that are important? And then if they are, again, elicit the feelings as well. So that's step two. So now we would have our whole first column now would have in it the submodalities that you've elicited from their internal representation of food that they like. So you have to be quick when you're doing it, because you've got to write it down as quickly as you're saying it, as quickly as they're speaking it. So just write it in shorthand. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to look great. Just do it so that you know what it says. So if it's focused or unfocused, F and a U, you know, simple stuff. Yeah. So once you've done that, step three. So good. So now can you think of a food? And it doesn't need to be necessarily a food. It could be anything, actually, my opinion. So can you think of a food or something which is similar and which you absolutely hate? I changed the word but to and because I never say the word but. Can you think of a food which is similar and which you absolutely hate? They say yes. You say good. What is it? They tell you. You say okay, so when you think of how much you hate that food, whatever it is, you say the food, do you have a picture? Again, we go ahead and elicit the submodalities. And ideally, for most people, the location would be different. It doesn't matter if it's not, but ideally, to make it really work, the location would be different. Then we do our contrastive analysis, which is basically compare the two sets of submodalities, the difference between the two. And then change the submodalities of the food that they like into the submodalities of the food that they hate, noting the driver. The reason why you're noting the driver is because when you notice it, you're going to crank it up. Because that's the driver that has the most impact. So once you've found that, you can keep like winding it up and keep winding the driver up. And then you say, okay, good. So now as you think about blah, 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 very important the question, look, now as you think about the food, how is it different now? Now why, well, for what purpose did we say, how is it different now? Because it's a presupposition that it's going to be different, yeah? It presupposes change has happened. And that's very important.